And okay, you're ready to go.
Okay, so it's May 26, 2020, 10:30-ish time here with IOC meeting in Southern Arizona. We can go around before we call for the agenda, at least this is Ken. Roll call as to who's on the phone, okay? So go ahead.
I'm Barbara Carling, Vice Chair. Go ahead.
I'm Dorothy Yanez, General Attendance.
Okay.
Good morning. My name is Adrian. Oh, go ahead.
Hi, this is Melissa Brown with Arizona Complete Health.
I'm Adriana Molina. I'm attending for Sophie Legaspi for United Healthcare Community Plan.
Hello, everyone. This is Joe Kautzman with Banner University Health Plan, Office of Individual and Family Affairs.
Hi, Joe.
Good morning. This is Ernisha Pinder, Office of Individual and Family Affairs Administrator for Mercy Care.
Good morning.
Phyllis Grant, a community member and from Family Involvement Center.
Sharon Faulkner-Glesby, foster care and community member.
Hi, everyone. This is Michelle Guidos. I am with Kodak Health Recovery and Wellness, which we are a provider agency in Tucson.
Larry Allen, I'm with ADOA.
Frederica Graham with Access.
Anyone else that hasn't identified? Nope. Okay.
Han Young Park with Care First Health Plan.
Okay.
Barbara, did you get all 17 people?
Yes. Well, I don't know that I got everyone. I'm going to speak. Please write. Dorothy, thank you. Oh, can you hear me? Yes. And I'm yes. Trying to keep up with as fast as I can. Again, new format, everyone. And I thank you so much for your patience with me today. Oh. By the way, hi, Phyllis.
Okay.
Of course,
calling in.
Hide her on the phone. I'll be right back. I'm trying to get it. I'll get her hooked up.
You mute that.
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay. So are we ready to review the minutes from the prior meeting? Do we have anything at this point for Larry that we're sent out?
From the minute. From the last minutes or just an ADOA update?
Review the number one, the review the minutes from prior meeting was on your agenda topics here.
Okay. Larry, forgive me. Susan Heider's on the phone and she's called in on that phone number we have. She can hear us, but she can't. No one can hear her. What does she do to resolve that? I don't know.
Unmute.
Yeah, she's on the phone.
Yes. Do you see Susan Heider anywhere?
She should be able to hear it.
She can hear speak. Is that how that works?
Yeah.
She should be able to log into the with the PIN number, log into the account with the PIN number, and then start there.
Okay, I'll have it.
Introduce themselves, but nobody can hear me.
Oh, there you go. Oh, that's right. So I was just notified. If you hit *6, it'll unmute yourself.
Try
*6.
I forgot about that. I apologize.
Thanks, Susan. Okay.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. And, sorry about that. Ken, I do have something off of our last meeting, which was in February. I do have something off our agenda in review.
Okay, great. Go ahead.
All the time, okay. And it's for Frederica. Good morning, Frederica. It was a note we had to ourselves to, it was about a request to you to look into the unfair charges at the Board and Care. Now, I don't know, Ken, that was on our notes, if I should wait to bring that up at Board and Care, or just, is this a good time? That was the only go-to I could find on our agenda from last February.
Okay. We can go in more depth in Board and Care, which is under 3E.
Okay.
If that's okay with you. And any other items on the minutes?
Is that okay, Frederica?
Okay.
Are you asking me something, Barbara? I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry, Frederica. Yes, it was just that. Good morning. And that last agenda in February, we were to contact you regarding looking into fair charges in the Board and Care system. Did we do that? Did I get to you? Do we know?
Not that I recall, but I'll go back through the emails and take a look.
Okay. All right. And I'm sorry. That's all I had on our in reviewing our notes from our last meeting. It's a little out of yes.
Okay.
Hello. Hello. This is Susan Hyder. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I hear you, Susan.
Oh, yay. Hi, everybody. Okay. This is Susan Hyder. Thank you for letting me come back after 15 months.
Okay. Welcome back, Susan. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Let's move on to the mission vision of it's number 2, Larry. You want to comment on that?
Sure, I can give you a quick update on what's been happening throughout the state. You know, Governor Ducey has started testing at 147 long-term care facilities throughout the state. There's a two-week deadline to get that done and get those results back out to the facilities and to the patients. Once that's done, they're going to start working on licensed facilities, group homes. With 11 or more people.
Question.
So that's going to happen here and probably in the this end of this week or next. Department of Health is obviously spearheading that. You know, they've ramped up remote testing throughout the state to get the antibody tests done. So there's numerous locations where you can go to get a test done. If you're not sure what's close to you, you can always go to azdhs.gov and you can find out, you can search by zip code and look at for a testing facility close to you. Other than that, you know, it's just kind of working with other agencies, supporting them as needed from an ADOA standpoint, and working with the other IOCs throughout the state to ensure that they're getting everything they need. So that's really the only update I have for the group. I don't know if anybody has any questions for me.
Anything from Access?
The only update we can provide at this time is just in regards to any FAQs that anyone may have in regards to what Access is doing for the details and that sort of thing. And if you guys like, I can send the email with the links that are open to anyone for view that we have on our website. They're updated very frequent, and any questions or concerns that you guys may have that come from that, you guys can send to me directly So I will send that out to the chairs, and I can also forward it to any other committee members that I have email addresses for. That's the only update that we have at this time.
I think Larry has the list of everyone, not only the members here, but also folks that's sent up for this meeting. So if you get it to Larry, he can get it out to all of us as a suggestion rather than kind of going from one person to another. That's okay.
Is it possible? Is it possible for me to get a copy if I'm a guest at this point?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. If somebody could give Larry my email, that'd be great. Barbara, I think you have it. Can
yeah,
have
we'll get it.
It
to him. It's higher.
Thank you.
Yep, get it. Anything else from Access?
That's it. Thank you.
Okay. Law enforcement, Jason, I don't think Jason's on. He may be celebrating his birthday today. He's turning 30. So.
Oh, a young one.
Yeah. Member recruitment, anything, anyone new coming in, potential that are maybe here one or twice and are still in the sort of intern age stage? Nope. Okay. Well, we reach out again if you have colleagues, friends, neighbors, those of you who are on the committee, as well as those who are not. We certainly can use more members here. So, outreach, again, the same thing. I don't think we have any new. But go ahead if I'm remiss in terms of outreach. Nope. Death and incident reports. Barb, any report on that? Or who? I think you said that Joanna's going to be doing that, but
yes,
she's not here because they're at her facility today at where she works. So she's on duty at her day job, so to speak.
Right. Yes. The cafe is opening up today with a partial crew. Yes. She's there today.
Issue to bring up then, and that would be that, Larry, are we posting the age and the gender? I know this came up before, and I know we've done that in the previous times, and again, we've been a little lapse here in time, but on the incident, accident, / seclusion restraints, refresh me, are we identifying not the person's identity, obviously, but, you know, there's a difference between a 17-year-old young female versus a 99-year-old individual, and incidents, accidents, seclusion, restraints, et cetera. So I was just wanting to see where we are on that. If disregard, if it's not it's a non-issue.
Yeah, Ken, I'm not sure about that. That would be a question for Frederica to look at, to see, maybe work with her IT people to see if that has been done or is in the process of being worked on. I don't know if Frederica has anything on that or.
This is Frederica.
I'm not sure, but.
Are you asking if the age and the sex of the person on the actual seclusion and restraint report is listed?
And or incident, accident?
Yes, they're there. All other information is redacted, but that information is visible.
Okay, it's still there. It's what I thought, but someone commented that it wasn't, and I just want to refresh that on that. And also just following back again on my long-term request, and that is simply to have some number identifier that we wouldn't know the person or the identity, but that I've asked that some time back. Larry knows about it. That if you're looking at an incident or a seclusion restraint and there's 10 different, you know, references coming up, we don't know if that's 10 different individuals or one individual times 10. I think everyone understands what I'm talking about. So where are we on getting that deciphered?
So if I understand you correctly, you're wanting a number sequence so that you can determine if it's the same member?
Yes.
Yeah, right. I think they came up several times last year to talk to Access about it. And again, it's not a HIPAA violation because only you would know that this 001 belongs to John Doe or 02 is Jane Smith.
Frederica, in the past, back when I used to get the paper copies, I'm going back, it was much more easy to follow a case to see what's going on with an individual because they had a unique identifier number. And I would have, for instance, for one individual in the system, I could maybe have 5 to 10 different times that she or he was in seclusion restraint. And it was much easier to see the story. And now it's pretty random and a little confused, well, very confusing to tell if this person, you know, does some intervention need to happen? Do we need to up the training of the people working with these people, you know, for a trauma history, something like that? You see where we're coming from? We're just trying to get a sequencing for the individual's system so that we can see a better. It's become very, very interesting since it's been on the server. So thank you.
This is Susan. In the past, for many, many years, we did have a identifier number. I don't know when it dropped off, but it was critical in following the cases. It made it much more meaningful and important to the people that are reviewing these cases. I don't know when or why it fell off, but we need to get it back on.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I believe what it used to be that way when there was one plan, but now that there's several, the statute doesn't allow for that to take place. We are trying to figure out a way to identify those specific people, as in if they had several different reports at a facility, so that you would be able to track that a little better. And I know we are currently working to get a different tracking system in place. I'm not sure exactly what that's going to look like. My leadership is aware of it, and we are working towards it. Won't go back to the way it was, because that was when it was one plan. So it doesn't allow for us to do that now. However, it is in the works. So we're attempting to figure out something to get you guys that information. It just hasn't come to fruition just yet.
Thank you, Frederica. It makes sense since it does, it's true. It is more complicated for us to even follow with. I do appreciate more people on board, all agencies coming in, but with the people moving agencies at times, it does get more confusing. So thank you. And I do hope you are successful in coming up with helping us. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So we'll add this to the follow-up for next month's meeting then, at least to see what progress is being made, Frederica. Hello.
I can hear you, Ken.
Hey, Ken.
Yeah. I said we're going to follow up on this for next month. Larry?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
We'll note it and give you get an answer for you.
Okay, good. Okay, then anything else on that? Otherwise, we'll roll to what is 3E, board and care. And I think it was referenced earlier in the opening statements with the minutes, and that is simply that when Barb and I went out to visit the last time a group home there, or at least a room and board in this case, There was a range from about $500 to $900. It was in the same facility. And again, the $900 rent was for person, individual, and the others were, I guess, they're sharing. But I think the question is, you know, what kind of check and balance is what's going on? And I realize this is throughout the whole state. And we just wanted to raise this issue because it seemed like quite a spread. I'm hearing even higher numbers than that. So part of the rationale is, well, they can afford more. Well, that's not necessarily the right answer. If someone has more money, then they can be charged more money. And so is there a ceiling on that? And I realize it's a difficult, complex to regulate or to put a ceiling on it, but at least we get some idea as to that case managers going out and looking and what they're placing, you know, what is the general rate for everyone there? And shouldn't they be somewhat the same? Unless there's different kinds of services offered, in which case that there has to be accommodations, et cetera. So I just wanted to follow up on Barbara's introducing earlier on.
So this is Frederica. I did look, and we don't have that request in there, but I believe what you guys are looking for is basically something that we don't have control of. And that's because the homes that you guys are referring to, and correct me if I'm wrong, are boarding homes. They're not licensed or contracted. So there's not a whole lot we can do. We don't have any oversight over those types of settings.
Correct, Rika. It's apparent that, especially from the one that Ken and I visited, that it's left up to the discretion of the person running the outfit. And her assistant was very, very candid with me, and I was a little shocked to find out how they decide what each individual will pay. And it is just on the discretion of the owner. So, but I do also appreciate that. I don't know how to get in there and manage that, like you say, because they're unlicensed. So any ideas would be welcome.
No. Well, again, I'll make this, Ken, we could jump in, not an easy answer. I realize that, and knowing somewhat of the system, but at least where the person who's placing, assisting, involved in the placement of the particular individual in that respective home would have some guidelines maybe issued, or at least, you know, what are the charges and is there a range that could be looked at at least. I'm not saying that you could regulate it. I understand the complexity of regulations, but at least would be some kind of guidelines as to, you know, if someone's paying $1,100 and someone's paying $500 and they're in the same room, or I'm not saying that's the case, but then that should at least be a little flag or should come up a question mark, at least to the individual that's involved in the placement, if that makes sense. So raising some consciousness is what I'm saying as far as, you know, when the placement is being made as it relates to the rates being paid. How you get that across, I realize we've got, you know, a lot vast number of individuals involved in the placement process. I just thought it should be at least raised and discussed. Are any comments on that?
Hi, this is Melissa. I think I've mentioned it before. We don't have any way to control the actual owners and what they charge, but our providers are... they should be, and from what I know, they do talk to the members that are residing there. And if it's something like they're charging them an exuberant amount of money, they should be talking to them about that, because that's probably affecting other areas of their life, like being able to buy their essentials. So I think Michelle Kitos from Kodak that's on the call, she's talked about it before. The providers should be having those discussions with the members that are residing there.
Yeah, exactly. This is Michelle. Sorry. I mean, from speaking from a provider agency, the communication that we provide to our our frontline staff, our recovery coaches, case managers, is that we're not to place members in boarding homes because of that reason, because there's no really oversight over them, because there can be instances where the members are paying X amount of money and it's, you know, it's a concern. So our messaging is that they're not to be placed, at least by our staff. Members sometimes come across either word of mouth through other members. We don't know, but those that are in placement with a boarding home, every month we go out and check on them and offer them other alternatives, and then that report gets sent to the health plan.
And that's a little in that background. Get.
Anyone else or comments? Or? Anyone else have any other comments on that or how we could otherwise?
Just one quick thing. This is Barbara again. Michelle, is there any way we could find out what the other agencies do regarding that? I know that you give the recommendation not to house there, but how about the other, you know, I'm thinking of, come on, yeah, La Frontera, for instance. Do we know?
Hi, Barbara, this is Melissa. That would be something that I could do. Michelle just shoot for Kodak, but yeah. I can ask all of the housing managers that we work with to kind of give me a summary of how they handle the issue. That request will have to go through access, through the formal process.
I see. You're okay. That would be wonderful. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. We'll look forward to hearing from you then.
And Barb, this is Larry.
Yes.
Just be sure you send an email to Access and include ADOA on that so we can help get that done for you.
Okay. This form that Melissa's talking regarding about getting this out to the managers at different agencies?
Yes, whatever you need help on through Access or requesting through Access, be sure you send it to them in an email form so that way.
Absolutely. Melissa, right. I'll be in touch with your, I'll get your help and I'll pop together an email with, or the proper form, because I struggle with those. I want to get it right.
Just an email form is fine. Trying to make sure that we have a trail and we're able to go back to it.
Larry, okay, I have notes for that. All right, wonderful.
So it doesn't get lost in the shuffle.
Sure, will do, thanks.
If you need any help with it, Barbara, I can help you, though.
Thanks, Melissa. I appreciate it. Good. Thank you.
Thanks, Melissa. Appreciate it.
This is Dorothy. So we'll have a question for Larry. I'm sorry. I have a question for Larry.
Go ahead.
In the past or up in Phoenix, has anyone or any legislature ever thought about submitting a law that we are now going to regulate boarding houses? Is there a reason why it's not being regulated?
You know, I don't know, Dorothy, if anybody has suggested that or have tried to get that passed. I don't know. I just don't know the answer to that.
Dorothy, you bring up a really valid question in that in our travelings, even Ken and I, I've noticed that some of these places that have popped up to house people have actually, I think they've gone into it for financial gain because of some of the places I've just seen most recently. Ken, remember the place with I don't know if I should use his name, you know, the Adrian that owns those housing places. And you're right. I don't know that there's any way to, I don't know what the rules and regulations are to keep these people from just opening up these places and putting as many people in as they can for profit. I don't know. And they don't have to be licensed.
That's my question, is why there isn't rules and regulations and why they are not licensed. Because we're talking about human.
Although, as memory will have it, and forgive me for my rustiness, we've been away from this. The one place he did ultimately have to close down and get a license, and I couldn't get to him to find out what brought that on. Somebody might have got on him, and I'd love to know, but I don't know. Adrian's place now, come to think of it, I went back, and they didn't have it all filled yet, but they were licensed finally. So, Melissa, does anybody understand that system? Frederica, anyone?
I do, and I'm being told that that may fall under landlord-tenant law. So I can look into that to confirm if that's the case. If it is, then they will, you know, there are things that can be done to make sure that everything is the way that it is in regards to or according to the Arizona landlord-tenant law.
Thank you.
One way maybe we could circumvent without going around people, but I mean, if you just limited, in other words, people would be, first of all, there's individuals that are residing there usually don't, you know, look under the phone book and find a place. They're placed by someone in the system as far as caseworker or manager, et cetera, et cetera. So bottom line is fast forwarding this. If we eventually evolve, and Melissa and company, the placements would be due to license or, you know, facilities only, and start reducing placements to unlicensed. I'm not saying you know, it may be grandfathered in or grandmothered in, but at least you would not further that problem by placing people into unlicensed locations. Does that make sense? I mean, in other words, it's easier said than done, but the goal, the plan would be to say, okay, gradually over time, we'll focus on the license or for get people to become licensed, and then they could become legitimate, if you will, for lack of a better term. Comments? Go ahead, please.
I think that's something seriously we should look into. I have a problem with people being assigned to a place and that there's no human regulations. So maybe that's something we can look into and even start soliciting legislators to change the law.
But Dorothy, let me say this. I have the list of the unlicensed in front of me. And thank you, Melissa, for providing it. But I must say, for the majority of these unlicensed places, I used to do these visits with Connie, who isn't with us right now, but we used to comment, boy, I'd live here. I mean, seriously, some of them are so well done. And there's a gal that has five sites. And I must say, she is the one that we're bringing up questions, though, about the disparity in the differences in what each person pays. But I've got to say, for the most part, her sites are, though unlicensed, she's a wonderful gal, by the way. I'm referring to Ruth Dempsey. But she's a wonderful gal, and she her sites are clean and well-managed for the most part. I mean, really nice. So I think that's why red flags didn't go up earlier in all the years that we've been out looking at the sites. Understanding that when we'd ask the owners, how come you haven't licensed, they'd go, well, there's so much red tape, and I can appreciate that. So I just backed off. But I do hear you, Dorothy. I think some regulation is a good thing.
So my thoughts are, is because they're unregulated, there's no accountability.
Well, not exactly, because thank goodness, one of our questions when we talk with the people there is, how often do you see your case manager? You know, how often do you see someone from your agency? And for the most part, they either have a family member or a case manager that is checking in, which was important, I felt. So it's not like they're totally, and then we show up randomly, which always kind of tickled me, because you should see the cleanups that would happen when they found out we were coming a day or two ahead, you know. If we gave them a week, they would really clean up. So, it is an ongoing issue. In fact,
I understand.
Dorothy, I'm going to take you on. I don't know how we're going to pull this off somehow. When we start up site visits again, I would love you to join me.
I've got the time.
Oh, good, wonderful. Which again is I don't even know how to. That's a whole nother topic. So, unless Larry has some news, or does anyone have news on how one would even pull that off? Visits?
For site visits?
Yes.
Well, it's going to really depend on what phase we're in and the recovery plan for the state. Right. So that's going to determine that. I have a feeling it's probably going to be easily another month or so. Maybe August. Yeah. We'll have to see how that goes. Time will tell on that, Barb.
Thank you. Yeah, I figured. I've ordered a hazmat suit, just isn't here yet.
We are. Okay, so bottom line on all this is that at least Melissa's going to look at it also and talk to the folks that she meets with, and at least get some sensitivity, if you will, on the issue, and then we can again bring it back to the table. And eventually then go into site visits, maybe like Larry's saying, it may be August or September. We don't know. No one knows the answer exactly when the virus will lift to zero.
Can I make a quick appeal, since those are off the table for our committee right now? And if anybody is, I know Joanna's started to learn the death and incident computer system. I would love some help with the FTP server and the seclusion restraint reports. My goodness, I would love some help. I'm just putting that out as a general request to the committee. And maybe now that we can't do other things, we can work on that. And that's the end of my appeal.
Good point. Okay, and I'll reach out for those who haven't, perhaps they're not at the meeting, Joe and Winsky, et cetera. Okay, shall we move on? Is there Phyllis, special populations?
Some feedback. Given what's going on. Given what's going on, a lot of services got switched or ended with the providers. I've spoken with families who said that the therapy they were getting stopped and then went to virtual, which is difficult. Some of the respite got stopped, although we are still providing respite. So, like everyone else, it's been a real struggle for families, having the kids at home and then not having these services that were happen the same frequency. I know, for example, DCS stopped all their face-to-face in-home visits. They're just phasing them in this week and next week. I had a couple parents tell me that they had stopped going to one provider and they wanted to go to a different provider. That provider said that they're not taking intakes right now. I don't know how accurate that is because I haven't been able to follow up with the providers, because the providers sure. I've talked to said they are doing the intakes. But it's a different process. It's this virtual world is really a challenge for a lot of families who don't have internet, don't have computers. And I struggle with it myself. I mean, and sometimes I feel like I want to have an IT person in residence because I do so many of these platforms and they don't always work well. So it's been a real hardship trying to continue services and be, having them be consistent.
Any comments on Phyllis's comment?
I will say one thing. There was a family I was working with, and a child was placed with them as a foster family. It was their very first time being a foster family. And the child was placed with them, and the mom reached out to me for help to come in and, see what we can do. And I went there, and this child's needs were so extreme. And this was beyond what they could handle. So I was very, very surprised that he was placed with them, because he should never have been placed with them. They were not, and as it turned out, he was removed about a week and a half after I met with them, because he was throwing hot coffee. He's 4 years old. And he was throwing hot coffee on their dog. He was breaking windows. He was biting. They showed me bruises. And so that concerned me that he was even placed with them in the first place. He was removed, and they were applying for HCTC. It was denied. They were appealing it. But they removed him from the home during the appeal. And I don't know, because he's removed from the foster family. I don't know what's happened, but I was when I talked with the mom on the phone, I already knew something. This was not a good, it didn't sound like a good situation. She was scared. She was desperate. I went to the home, I think the next day or the day after, and witnessed some tantrums, and they showed me the bites on their arms, the father and the mother, their 10-year-old that said that they had was scared of him. And it really concerned me that he was even ever placed there, because his needs were not going to get met. And the family was there was a huge safety risk for the family. I was really disappointed that the provider did not, whoever placed him there never have. His needs
right.
were too
high. Right.
So I don't know what the challenge is with HCTC, but I'm telling you, this kid was a poster child for HCTC and yet was denied initially, and they had to appeal it.
Comments?
This is Karen. I know with regular foster care, we've had a lot of foster parents actually open up their homes because of COVID. That typically they have not opened their homes because they felt like they were full. They had their two kids, but we've had some homes that have expanded their license to be able to help with respite and stuff like that. So we do have both sides of it. I think some of the stuff that you might be seeing, Phyllis, is that people are doing things remotely, like you said, and they're not able to put eyes on the kids, so they're not able to justify some of those behaviors. I'm hopeful it'll get better, but I don't know. And unfortunately, I wish I could say that it's because of the virtual pieces why they're not being able to see a lot of that, but we find that a lot of regular foster care where kids are placed in these foster homes and they are HCTC as far as we can see, but for whatever reason, the behavioral health agencies haven't deemed them HCTC. It's a battle we constantly go back and forth with a lot of our homes. But all we can try to do as for regular foster care anyway is try to train our foster parents on how and to note down, document, make sure all the information is getting back to the guardian and the team. So that way maybe we can justify the HTTC rates for the foster parents, even if they stay in that foster home, like how can we train that foster home at a higher level? It goes back and forth, but we have had some homes open up their beds. We've had some where the foster parents have a pre-existing condition and they're a little bit more scared about what's going on and taking in kids, but it just goes back and forth.
Yeah, it's a struggle. My fear is that when we come out of this, and this is, I've talked to DCS about this also, and Sharon, you probably have the same fear, is that there's going to be an escalation of as we start going back into homes and start doing more face-to-face, there's going to be an increase in DCS calls to the hotline. Because right now everybody's hiding in their homes. And like you said, virtual isn't the same as face-to-face. And so I'm concerned things could be happening in homes that none of us are even involved in right now. But we may find and that we hear about families that have never had a DCS incident, you know, referral before are now going to be, because they've just struggled, these kids' behaviors have gotten, you know, point where the families are struggling with it, the kids are struggling with it. So it affects people in so many different ways. And, you know, we have adults with their own challenges. I provide respite and peer support to a young woman who has DID, and her daughter, who's 2, is now home every day, has been. So I'm trying to put as much respite as I can, because she has a relationship with me and that she's very honest, said, I need help, you know, I need a break. So between me and one of my respite providers, we're both giving her respite as much as we can. But at least she was able to vocalize that to me. There are people out there that have no one to talk to or don't know that they can trust the person they want to talk to. Because I have other families who I just found out one mom is a DDD client. I had no idea. It explains a whole lot. I wish I'd known that before. I wish that the other provider had told me that before. It would have really helped me to understand why certain things have happened. And, you know, and she's struggling. So there's just so much going on. And this has exacerbated a lot of things for families and made things more difficult. I know there's always a good side to everything, no matter what happens. And people, you know, are being more creative. I know that we're doing more creative things, engaging with families. We're doing a lot of art stuff with families where we're 6 feet away. But I know in Phoenix they're doing a lot of virtual stuff, doing parenting classes. But the bottom line, like you said, Sharon, if you can't put your eyes on the situation, you don't really know what's going on all the time when it comes to kids and families.
Right. And we're expecting a huge, like, there's a couple times a year where foster care agencies and even adult foster care agencies, we expect a higher level of calls to come into the hotline in regards to allocations. Usually it's like the beginning of the school season, right after the holidays. Huge influx of calls, not only because the parents are not able to see their kids or they're starting to see their kids. And unfortunately, that's where some false allegations come from. But even some allegations about foster parents not able to meet means because they lost their jobs and stuff like that. So we are expecting it in the next 30 to 60 days where we're going to start seeing a huge influx. And unfortunately, some of it is going to be around income and being able to justify them continuing to do foster care because they've lost their jobs or whatever because of COVID. Yeah. So we're expecting it.
Yeah.
Ken, you still there?
Maybe he's on mute.
Ken? Well, let's move on to Reba and provider updates. Any updates from our providers?
This is Joe Kaufman with Banner.
Hi, Joe. Yes, go. Yes, please.
Hi, Banner has no updates at this time. Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you, Joe. Adriana?
United has no updates at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Let's see. Melissa?
The only update that I have, and it kind of ties into what Phyllis and Karen were talking about, is we're doing bi-weekly like support meetings for our peer and family member support staff, just to, you know, talk with them and make sure that we're providing the support that they need so that they can help our members, providing resources, and even just talking to them about being able to handle the new situation with quarantine and how their mental health is. It hasn't been heavy on the focus of members, but I appreciate the feedback that you guys have given. It's something that I want to bring up to our advocates who are leading that meeting to see if they can get some feedback from some of the other provider staff so that we can try to help our members as best as possible. Because I know that, like Phyllis was saying, a lot of our members struggle with the new virtual system. So I also, if you would like to attend too, Phyllis, it would be great. I can send you the information. You might have staff already attending, but I can send it to you.
I have been attending this the last two ones, but I've attended it twice so far. They're great. I really like them.
That's fabulous. I'm glad to hear that. That's all that I had.
Hello there. This is Han Young Park with Care First Health Plan. We have a member advocacy council coming up on June 3rd for our central region. And our central region for the ACC contract includes Maricopa, Pinal, and Gila counties. So that meeting is available. We're hosting it on June 3rd. Virtually, and people can RSVP using our website.
Is there any way, could you get that information to Larry Allen? And Larry, could you distribute that to us? I don't know that I have access to follow that thread. I can't write fast enough, but for those interested. Is there any way?
If they send it over to me, this is Frederica. I can get it sent out.
Thank you, Frederica. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, either way works.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. So I don't see, by the way, Ken, are you there? Ken? Okay. Obviously there's no report from the public, so I don't know if anybody has anything else to add. We will have another virtual meeting on June 23rd, and I'll work to get that information out. Does anybody have anything else that they would like to bring forward? Okay, well then if not, we'll go ahead and look forward. Thank you everyone for participating. And I personally liked this worked out okay, that this is going to work. And let's see what we can get done together using this new world we're in. And again, thank you all for attending. And Larry, thank you for organizing this.
Oh, my pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Frederica. Okay. And Dorothy, I'll be in touch with you to get a little help on getting a full answer for your question on that email I'll be sending. Okay.
Okay. Just remember, I think they're two separate issues. Going and looking at the boarding homes is one issue, but having regulation is a separate issue.
Yes, that's what I'm looking for from you. We'll put together an email that covers that. That'd be lovely. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you for your time and thank you for your efforts.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thanks. Okay, all be safe, be careful. I hope you're all staying healthy and well, and I look forward to seeing you. Okay?
Bye, everyone.
More cameras. Thank you.
All right, bye. Everybody bye. Be well, stay well.
Yes. Bye.
And
you. Bye.
Yes, bye-bye, everybody. Thanks, Larry.
Thank you.
Okay, Barb, good job.
Oh, yeah.
Larry, thank you.
It's over.
Look forward. I say good job.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're welcome. Okay, I'll be speaking with you. I guess I'll hang up now.